Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. We are excited this evening. We are going to be having a little bit of a roundtable discussion. As always, your participation and interaction is always welcome. If you want to get in and join the conversation at any point during the conversation, all you have to do is press the number one. That lets us know that you want to get involved, that you want to be come up on board and participate with us, and we'll try to involve you as quickly as we possibly can. With no further ado, we're going to start out the show as we normally always do, taking a look back at the DAT trend lines report for the week. Percentage change on diesel fuel is unchanged, so we're still sitting at a national average for diesel fuel price at $2.43 per gallon on average throughout the country. Load posts rose last week as shippers and logistic companies looked to the spot market to reposition freight ahead of tropical storms Marco and Laura. That's pushing the national average rates up to their highest level since July of 2018. So let's take a look and let's see how the spot market rates were performing over the previous week, beginning out with dry van segment, starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States. We're showing a national outbound average for dry vans of 179. Dropping down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing an outbound average for dry vans at 208. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing outbound spot market rates at 229. Moving out of the south central region of the United States, we're showing outbound spot market rates for dry vans at 215. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing outbound spot market rate for dry vans at 237. Jumping over to the flatbed segment of the report, starting out in the upper northeast portion of the United States, outbound spot market rates for flatbed are showing on average 201. Coming out of the southeast and mid-Atlantic, are spot market averaging for flatbeds at 240. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing average flatbed rates on the spot market at 237. Coming out of the south central region of the United States, we're showing a national average for flatbeds at $2.30. And coming out of the west coast, we're showing an average spot market rate of $2.06. Moving over to the temperature-controlled reefer portion of this report, starting out in the upper northeast region of the United States, outbound rates on the spot market range at $1.97 on average. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeast, outbound rates on the spot market at 210. Coming out of the Midwest, showing outbound spot market rates strong, $2.62 per mile. Coming out of the south central region, we're showing an average of 227. And wrapping up, coming out of the west coast, still very strong, $2.60 per mile. And with that being said, let me jump back over and grab my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Good evening, Chuck. How are you?
We're good. How are you, Rico?
Doing well. Kind of excited to get some input from some other fellow owner operators that are out there doing their thing. How are things up your way with traffic?
We're doing good. You know what? Things are pretty busy. There's some. We're starting to see a real return in a lot of markets. The domestic U.S. flatbed market, especially, capacity is tight. And if you've read about it, Lowe's and Home Depot are killing it, along with a lot of the other large retailers in home improvements. And there's a lot of flatbed activity right now, and there'll be more, unfortunately, with these hurricanes approaching, because there's always fences and poles to be replaced. So, that's the sad part of it. for a lot of people. They're going to be inconvenienced, and I just hope everybody gets out of the danger zone real quick. We've never seen one like this. And with everything else at the same time, it's I hate to say it, but it's unfair that COVID happens and a lot of an economic downturn in certain segments. And now we have hurricanes to deal with in one part of the country, and then the other part of the country, forest fires. So nobody's getting a break this summer, which is unfortunate. But our industry
will be
there to serve
people. And one of the phrases that you just said is becoming a little bit too, almost becoming a little cliche. We've never seen one like this before.
It's true. Unfortunately, we haven't.
Right.
And I don't want to see another one either, you know.
Exactly. But with that being said, you know, I'm kind of excited to talk to some other guys and get some input from some other guys and girls to see what they have been doing and what's going on with actual operations. And we have a really good section because I think we kind of got a country also that are going to be participating tonight on the round table. And with that being said, I want to add a welcome to the show. How are you?
Rico, you're breaking up a bit. I don't know whether that's your phone or your microphone.
Let me try something else. Hopefully, this you're
yeah, you were. It was all coming through very clear, and then all of a sudden, you started to break up in the last 30 seconds or so.
Hopefully, that's better.
Whatever you're doing.
Hopefully that's better. Sometimes my phone, when I'm in a portion of the house, it connects to the Wi-Fi, and then the Wi-Fi gets really choppy. So I have to just disconnect the Wi-Fi from my phone. Hopefully that's solved that problem.
Yep, it's all solved now.
All right. Well, Darryl, without any further ado, we'll apologize for the little glitch there. How are you this morning? Darryl, are you still with us?
Darryl?
Oh, yep. I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Okay, there he is.
Okay. There he is. Yes, sir. So welcome
for our
to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I just wanted to introduce Darryl. Darryl Rutherford runs a company up in Canada called Duranco Specialized. Darryl, do you want to tell the audience what you do over at Duranco?
We specialize in LTL, general freight, from Ontario to the Northwest and back. We only run certain lanes because we want to be the best in what we do. We can't be everything to everybody, so we just want to be that one lane to the Northwest and be the best we can be.
No, it's commendable. And you know what? It looks like you're getting there. You've done a great job building a company in a very short period of time. And Kim Heck is the president of Blue Heron Logistics in upstate New York. Kim, welcome to the show. Glad to have you on again. And can you just tell our listeners that haven't met you before what you people at Blue Heron do?
Sure. Thank you, Chuck. I'm really glad to be here again. At Blue Heron, really we specialize in, we do a lot of like high-value machinery, specialized freight. We've moved zoo animals, artwork, like the stranger the better. That's really where we thrive. We also... Well, it's fun. Like, it's just fun to move crazy stuff. And then we also do some dedicated logistics for some local customers.
Right. And how far do you go with your trucks normally?
With the dedicated logistics in general, we're pretty much just in the Northeast. But when we move the specialized stuff, we go all over all 48 states. We also have a couple moves coming up to Canada, actually, so into your neck of the woods.
Okay. Let me ask you, out of what percentage of your freight goes outside of that, what do you run, about a 400-500-mile radius from upstate New York?
I would say the dedicated stuff is roughly 600 miles, 700 miles away, kind of that radius.
Right.
Outside of that, probably 15 to 20% of that is more of the specialized stuff.
Right. And are you looking at expanding on that specialized market?
Yes,
definitely. Again, that's really our niche. That's where we do well. When we hire drivers, we try to hire drivers that have the ability to do more than, just pull kind of general freight.
Right.
We have a young guy now that we're teaching him, how to strap things in, how to problem solve, because with some of the freight that we pull, you really have to have some problem solving skills to make sure that you hear it properly.
How true. You know, the best problem solvers, I think that, when I think back to, 41 years of running traffics, the best problem solvers we have on the road are always farmers. And there aren't, unfortunately, we're starting to run out of farm boys, both in Canada and United States, because farms have become so mechanized and they're so large that
right.
we don't have those farm boys that we used to have.
So Chuck, my two best drivers, one of them is a young kid that's a farm boy, and the other one is, he owns a construction company. So he has that problem solving skill. So those are my two best drivers that I have.
Yeah. I don't doubt it, because these are, both those professions, you got to be able to think on your feet real quickly.
Right. I actually, have one of my drivers here with me that, is the gentleman that's in construction. And he spends a lot of time kind of teaching the other drivers just little things about how to secure the freight, but like maybe the truck breaks down and you have a little issue, kind of how to rig it so that you don't have to do roadside service. You can make it to somewhere that can fix the truck or the trailer. So that's been very helpful.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's a huge savings. Now, what are both of you doing as far as maintenance on trucks? Daryl, what are you doing over at Duranco Specialized these days?
So what I've just developed and implemented at my business is I have my own guy. Every time a truck's in the yard, he gets a full A service. I have an extensive sheet. Actually, the shops actually don't like my sheets because it's so extensive. It takes 3 hours to go through it. So what I've decided is, because CVR is so, it is so important to keep your CVR and your DOT up to speed.
Oh, yeah.
That I have him come in and he has to use my sheet. Any shop my truck goes into for a simple grease has to go through my A sheet. And I have noticed that since I've implemented it 7 months ago, it was very expensive at first to implement it. But now that I've implemented it, my road problems have dropped by 95%. I very rarely have any breakdowns on the road. And my guys are happier. And I know of problems ahead of time. It's one of those things, that old age attitude of preventive maintenance is amazing. It just, every Thursday, mechanic shows up. He spends 12 hours in my yard going over every piece of equipment. And I made it mandatory that if my owner-operator's trucks are in the yard, they get gone over as well. It's mandatory to be part of Duranco Specialized. We do not skimp on maintenance. And everyone has actually said, I got really decent prices. Like him to go over a truck for 3 hours, he charges $140. And
that's cheap.
The way we were doing it when we first started, was we maintained it when we could every 18,000. We still do our AB at 18,000, but just having that 2 week
right.
grease and full go over has made an increasing easier time with roadside inspections. I haven't failed the roadside inspection or had any out of service or even written tickets compared to maintenance at all since I installed that policy.
Good job.
So if you don't mind, give us a sneak peek at what all you have on that list.
I should have brought a list with me.
Give us some idea.
They check everything from doors, windows, windshield wipers, windshields, tires, torquing the wheels, full grease, check the rundown on the compressor, make sure the compressor timing is good, make sure the buzzer works. It's basically a small safety without pulling the wheels. We measure tire depths. We measure brake linings. We have a special tool to measure the drums. He tries to see if there's any heat cracks in the drums. It's a full go over. It's basically a mini safety every 2 weeks.
You need that
wow.
when you're running, especially you want to check your brakes. Good job.
Yeah, it's funny because we have a couple of other services for Chase Airlines, and it wasn't even Chase Airlines. It was the fact that they had those hard plastic coatings running around it to keep them together.
Yep.
And guys just weren't washing their truck or wiping them so it would move a little bit. Minnesota was the worst. As soon as it moved a little bit and they seen a clean area, they would nail you for chafing. So we took all those off. We used heater hose and not bungee cord, zip tied it. But we go down to wiping down the air hoses every 2 weeks, so there's no dirt on the air hoses. So, and we've been inspected since then with Minnesota, and there's been no issues. It's those little things of making sure that all the spacers in the airlines are actually connected, because you'd be surprised when you travel 6,000 miles to Seattle and back how they vibrate and they pop out, and the guy doesn't catch it in three trips. So the mechanic catches it, he puts it back together.
That's impressive. Good job.
Ooh.
Actually, if you guys are interested, I'll email you my A and B sheet, because when I went into Mac here in Barrie and I just bought 3 brand new Macs, they had to re-rate their service because it was taking them so long to go through it. There's so much. Like, they record, like I said, tires, brake linings. They're like, this is a safety. I'm like, yeah, but it's every 2 weeks. I don't care. I want safe equipment.
So this is a little bit of a discussion that's kind of come back up. It's been kind of rearing its head here and there every so often. But 60 Minutes did another story again this past Sunday on the fully autonomous trucks that are now they don't have the babysitting model anymore. They're fully autonomous, no driver in the truck. Goal is to of course, cause disruption within the industry. Some people still think that there are a lot of people of schools of thought that think we're still 10, 15, 20 years away from it. What do you guys think about this, and what do you think, how do you think it's going to affect the industry, if anything, at all, within the next 5 years?
Kim, did you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So, I mean, as far as autonomous trucks go, I mean, I think that we're going to see them. We're going to have them. But I guess, you know, out here on the East Coast, I don't know that the infrastructure and the roads are really set up for autonomous trucks yet. Like, I think there still needs to be a little bit of work. As far as that goes, I could see them, you know, running the interstates and stuff, but you're still going to need drivers that can drive in the cities and do the deliveries and stuff like that. So I think it's going to happen. I just don't think it's going to be a big part of trucking for a while. I mean, that's my opinion. That's the way I look at it.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree. And how about you, Daryl? What do you think?
I can't wait for them. I actually think it's going to make trucking 1,000 times better. I'm actually trying to get a company to give me a couple of the trucks to test them on LTL. I think it's going to make my industry, what I'm in, what I specialize in, better. It's going to put my guys home more. The only problem I see with is the fueling issue. If they can get the fueling infrastructure in place, so that, you know, when you go into a Love's, they'll fill the truck for you. I would like them yesterday, because the biggest problem I have with drivers is whether they're doing 500, 600, or even long haul, they're still on the road 6 days a week. And I think we can bring a much more professional driver to the market if he knows he's going home and sweeping his own bed. So the fact that I can load a truck, send it to the border, send it out west, when it gets out west, go to the terminal, and then a human takes over, I agree with Kim, for the local deliveries, we're going to need drivers. And that's going to become a really important market. And, you know, it's that old age thing. You know, if you don't accept change and figure out a way to work with change, it's going to leave you behind. And these companies that refuse to do it are going to be left behind. So I think we all should jump on the bandwagon, get the trucks running, work with manufacturers to make it happen faster, and the states as well.
You know what? It certainly, the technology is there. I have some reserves about it. I think the technology is there to do it pretty quickly. But in reality, what happens or what is going to happen when you have a crash, which is inevitable? And who are they going to sue because there's no driver? Whose fault is it? So you send or somebody else sends a truck up the road and it has a crash. Do they sue Volvo or do they sue the owner of the truck? And I honestly believe in my heart that what's going to happen is we're going to start running these things. There's going to be a few crashes, and these litigation scavengers in the U.S. that are all – they're more common in the U.S. than they are in Canada. We have a few of them here too. But the punitive damages are much more severe with these nuclear verdicts in the U.S., they'll have a field day with it. That'll put that technology on hold for 5 to 10 years minimum until they figure this out and it goes through all the courts. I got a call today from one of our regular guests, Mike Lampel, who saw that 60-minute show the other night, and he's jumping up now because he's a tech guy. And he says, you know, this is going to change your whole industry. And I'm saying, well, yes and no. I think what it's going to allow us to do is do our jobs better, because I don't think drivers will have to have the skill sets in future that they have in the past. I think we'll be able to, hire people, train them to some degree, but certainly between the insurance companies and the carriers ourselves, we won't have to demand the level of experience to pilot one of these units down the road, because technology will do most of it for us. And fortunately or unfortunately, it'll do it better than, as long as it's working, than most of us can do manually. So I think we have that to look forward to. Rico, what's your take on it?
It's going to be very interesting. I agree with a lot of the things that have already been said, I'm of the impression that it may be sooner than later. Some people still are the opinion it's 10 years, 15 years down the road. I think that we might be seeing a window here within the next 7 years where we might see a lot more of this on a regular basis. I know that the they are really pushing technology wise. All of these different things, and they're already kind of implementing a lot of stuff now with all of the telematics and stuff that they're putting in the trucks with us drivers still in it. So, you know, I'm of the impression that definitely is coming, and I know that a lot of the bigger fleets will definitely are really pushing behind it, because it would definitely help increase their productivity. you don't have, you no longer have the cost of a driver and the benefits that come along with that. So I think that a lot of the bigger players are definitely behind, putting a bigger push behind it because they want to try to gain more market share to try to get that capacity away from right now. As most people may or may not know, but the majority of the market share is with the smaller independent companies. Of course, the bigger companies have the contracts, but most of the freight and throughout the North America is moved mainly by small independent carriers.
Yeah.
You're
right.
So, Chuck, can I ask you a question?
Anything you want.
So what type of freight do you think these autonomous vehicles will be hauling? Like, do you think it'll just be general freight? I mean, the reason I'm asking is because, I'm in the specialized freight market, and I can't imagine, to be quite honest, an autonomous vehicle pulling some of the stuff that we do. So I just want to hear what your guys' thoughts are about the type of freight they might haul.
Well, I can't see an autonomous truck delivering an elephant to a zoo or some of the other neat stuff that you guys have done. But I can certainly see it on commoditized freight and freight. I can see the future in automotive freight, for example, because that is, it goes like as far as the auto plants go, they have all these tier one and tier two suppliers delivering to the plants and then returning back to the manufacturer with the racks. They got rid of, that was something I saw years ago when I was an in-house logistics provider for a company that's now defunct, that had been bought out a few times, Davidson Rubber. And we worked on a pilot project with them back, well over 30 years ago, where they realized that the cost of this dunnage for cartons was really expensive for everybody, so they built racks, and we started to do round trips. And it worked out, and now that is what everybody does. And so I can see it there. I can certainly see it on longer trips. Daryl, you probably had a lot more mountain experience than anybody on this call. What do you think? How do you think that these autonomous trucks are going to react in real adverse weather conditions like we have in Canada on the Coquihalla or even Donner Pass and Flagstaff? What's going to happen then? What's going to happen with chains? There's another question.
We already have the automatic chains available. And they're actually worthwhile putting on. You flip a switch, so that can be a sensor. That's where I'm trying to work with. I want one of these companies to start working with me, so I have a driver in the truck, and they can actually see the snow-covered nice roads because they're GPS. Down in Florida on the I-10, it's great. Going to California, it would be great. There is some challenges in the north, but once again, even when you mentioned about crashes, I looked at the fact that, I can put trucks on the road, and now without a driver, it can run. And all my guys are single, right? So I can actually slow that truck down to 50 mile an hour, okay? Put special warnings on it. Like Samsung has that availability to put on your back doors so the car behind can see the road in front to know to pass. I think that would have to be part of it because, the truck's going to break. It's going to do things when it detects a car is unsafe. So there is some work to go with the infrastructure. But I think with the right conditions, working with the government, because like you said, the nuclear verdicts have to stop. And I think this is a perfect way to have the nuclear verdicts for carriers. And like I was explaining the other night when we were chatting about the liability, I try to educate my customers about liability of using an unsafe carrier just so you can save $150. That's where I see the autonomous vehicle taking that out because the trucks are going to be running slower because we all know since the ELDs, there's still some cowboys out there. They're racing through towns because they're on a clock. That takes all that risk away. I could put a truck, and I've already did the calculations, I could run the truck at 40 mile an hour. It's still going to make it to Seattle faster than what my trucks do.
You're going to be a real unpopular guy on the interstate.
But you see, there won't be any other drivers out there. So a truck's going to come up. They're all running 40. They're going to stay in line. The computer doesn't care if the truck in front of him is a half mile slower. He's just going to slow down, where a driver gets antsy with that half a mile an hour because he can't set his cruise. Like, I've taken into the adaptive cruise on my trucks, and I've had nothing but raves from my drivers because they set the cruise, and as they come up on a half a mile an hour slower truck, the truck just backs off, resets the cruise, and they go along. It's thinking outside the box and accepting technology to come. I actually think there'll be less crashes. That's my honest feeling.
You know, I think there will be, because you know what? I think that as long as technology works, I think machines do things better than we do. They're more precise with everything, whether it's making a suit, a machine will do much better than handmade, or whether it's shifting 13 or 18 gears in a truck. You know, I always prided myself on how well I can shift, but I listen to these automatic transmissions in trucks. My God, they do a better job than I'll ever do. I hate to admit it. And you know, all the other wonderful technology that's in trucks today. You know, there's these, we have the rollover sensors, and we have crash avoidance. You know, it's all available. So I think we're at the very beginning of a great time to make things better. You know, you look at a truck now, and you look at a truck even 20 years old, they're a totally different beast. But I still can't get my head around sending somebody until we change a lot of things, or sending a load without a driver manning that truck. I just have a problem buying into it in as quick as you guys think it's going to happen.
I just thought of something else to kind of throw to try to shift gears a little bit. If you want to finish your point Darryl, I don't want to take your point away from you. So I'll be quiet and let you finish your point. But I got another kind of shift gears after you finish that.
I just think with the autonomous trucks, if they bring in the infrared sensors, I even think the deer collisions will come down, because you can scan a larger area with infrared, and it'll be able to see a moose, especially in northern Ontario, elk in Idaho, BC. It's going to see that animal coming towards the road. Now, it's going to be a challenge to figure out if the animal's actually coming across the road, but that truck at night is going to see that animal faster and start reducing speed way before a human could ever do it. So,
good point.
Like, it's one of those things where it's scary, because I'm an old cowboy. I've done the Seattle to Toronto no sleep, and I wouldn't have any of my drivers do that, because, you know, it's probably the same in your day. You've done some things you probably shouldn't have done. But I really think it's actually going to make transportation safer. And just on the fact that when your drivers are doing deliveries, you know, you're sleeping 10 hours in a bunk, you're still tired sometimes by the time you hit Seattle. So now the driver's coming from home. You got some other issues that come in involved, like if he's had an argument or something with his wife or his partner. But I think transportation will get back to being better. And I'm all for change. I'm old school in one way with customer service, but I'm all for changing and jumping on the bandwagon and see what we can do. But there's going to have to be a lot of government regulation around the fact of these nuclear verdicts. The government authorizes the truck to be on the road. The government has to take some responsibility to say, okay, this is proven. You'll have all kinds of cameras. So we may actually find out why we're having all these accidents. It's because there's going to be so many cameras on these trucks and recording so much stuff. We'll find out is it actually tired drivers? Was it trucks? Or is it immature four-wheelers being aggressive and putting a truck into a situation where it's jackknifing or going into the median? That's kind of my take on it. I can only see it being better, not worse, except for, like, what Kim made a very valid point. With the specialized transportation, I don't see it coming to play ever, because, you know, one day you got 12-foot wide, the next day you have a 22-foot wide.
Yep. That's
going to happen.
That's the skill set.
And I think that the more exactly. specialized, the more secure you may have created a little bit of insulation for yourself. Next question. I'm just thinking, kind of forgot all about it because I haven't been running at all this past week. But it is the CSBA inspection week. What are some of the things that you guys, with your operations, have you experienced or noticed any more inspections this week? Or what are some things that you are noticing, what are some things that are taking place during this time or any time when they have the inspections?
Joe?
Kim or Chuck?
Are you noticing anything?
We notice a lack of it.
So this is Flint. So he does the driving, so I'm going to let him answer the question because he's out there.
Go ahead. Welcome aboard.
We notice an awful lot up here that a lot of the DOT stations are closed, or they'll have you drive through and they continue on. They might have one truck in there and 10 troopers, but we don't see them pulling as many trucks in. Same way with the scales. A lot of them are, way in place, and that's great, but there's a lot of scales in the Northeast that they pull you in, but they go right through the green light. They don't sway anybody, which is kind of odd. It's been this way for about 5 months now, 6 months, and I haven't noticed it increasing at all.
Yeah, so I know that one of our drivers, I own a warehouse also, and one of our drivers does most of our, local runs or does deliveries for our warehouse customers. And I know that he was pulled in by DOT, and I actually know the woman that kind of heads up the group that does the inspections, and she called me and said that he was acting very nervous. But with that said, everything passed. Everything was good. But that was really the only inspection that we had. And my driver was acting nervous because he's just a nervous person. He wants everything to be perfect. Like he wants to know that he is going to pass the inspection with flying colors. And I think the only thing that they found was he had a light out on his trailer or something.
License plate.
Right. Okay. So with that said, yes, they did do quite a thorough inspection. But he's local. He was really the only one. My over the road guys, they really haven't run into that.
You keep your trucks in great condition. They're clean.
Right.
You haven't had a lot of issues. If they do pull you in, they punch in your DOT number and they go, let's not waste time with this guy because we know who these guys are. They're good. They're looking for, there's telltale signs that make trucks, like when you hear these statistics that, X number of thousands of trucks were pulled in and 61% had something wrong with them. You have to remember, the trucks they usually pull in are the renegade trucks to start with. They're the ones that are either something caught that inspector's eye. And I try to explain this to our drivers and owner-operators. Our drivers get it. Sometimes some of our owner-operators, I have to remind them, so much of it is optics. When you drive through that scale, you drive over that plate, if that truck is clean, number one, and it's in good, it's in a state of good repair. And we do things, I don't know whether you do the same, but we have a deal with on wheels. And those white wheels get dirty and rusty pretty quickly. So we're always pulling them, and we have a deal with a company where they refurbish them, and they're always sending us new ones. So that's a giveaway. When you drive through and your wheels are just totally rusted, you're probably going in for an inspection. They want to find out, well, this guy doesn't really care about his wheels. What else doesn't he care about? Well, you drive over the plate. Go ahead.
It's funny that you say that, Chuck, because You know, during this whole COVID thing, we had a few weeks where my drivers were not driving consistently. So what I ended up having them do was come in and, you know, like fix trailers, like make the wheels look pretty. We have a curtain side trailer. It was sanded down and paint the underside. Like, let's make the equipment look pretty so that it looks like we care about it, which we do care about it, but you got to look like you care about it. So, yeah, that's a really big deal.
Yeah, exactly. And you know,
go ahead, John.
I believe in the smile. I actually go out, and if I look at a driver's trailer, like Grant came in this afternoon, I went and looked to see if he did his inspection this morning. And if I don't see the smile on the oil cap, I get on my drivers. Yep. It's amazing, you know, because trucks go and they get dirty. But if you do that smile every morning and make sure your oil is good in the plate, that's what the inspectors are looking for, actually. If they see that, they will actually pass the truck through because they know the driver looked. They know the driver cared. So once again, it's presentation, right? You present a fairly decent looking piece of equipment. You do the things that they're looking for. They're not going to bug you because we have 11 trucks running this weekend and not one of them got pulled in.
You know what? It's obvious when people see your trucks drive over the plate, they know that you know what you're doing.
That's right.
And chances are, if the optics are good and you look good and your stuff is clean and it's orderly, and when they punch your number in, you know, there's no reason. Nothing alarms them. They're looking for the bad guys. What a waste of time.
They're looking for the yellow and red light.
Some guy. They're looking for the guy that's driving over the plate that looks like his truck has not been washed, since Clinton was the president. They're looking for stacks of papers on windshield system. I've had discussions with my guys, and one guy I had to scare him and say, "You're going to cause a fire." You know, it's called spontaneous combustion. The guy was an owner operator I used to have, and he used to use, like, I couldn't believe the amount of paperwork. I had one guy working for us once. His truck looked rough on the outside, and I opened the door. I almost died. And I'm not joking, he was up to his ankles in seeds from sunflower seeds. And I said to him, "I can't even imagine what your home looks like." I said, you know, I ended up firing him. Because, you know, he was going to make trouble. He got up and down the road fine. But the optics were so bad, we didn't need it. So, you know, it's important to protect our images out there, I think.
I agree.
Exactly. Well, shifting gears once again, and looking at the time, we're burning through the hour, but I just wanted to get maybe a year-end, final synopsis on how everybody, some of the things that everybody's doing, what is their outlook on the rest of the year, and maybe, tell us some good, bad, and ugly about what you're experiencing right now with your operation. Kim, we'll be gentlemen, and we'll let ladies start first as usual.
You guys, you're very polite. So far things for us are actually going really well. We did have a customer that was one of our main customers that really changed kind of the model of how we were doing business with them, which forced us to change how we were doing business and look, we've never used brokers before, but we started using brokers and it ended up being a really good change for us. It kind of changed our perspective on things a little bit, which I, looking back, really appreciate. As far as going forward, there's things that I'm doing. For example, I applied to be a minority and woman-owned business, which is a big deal if you want to move, like, any government freight or anything like that. So that's a little bit of a niche that I'm kind of looking into. We decided to build a website so that we have more of a web presence. George was really into Facebooking, which I am not. And so he was able to update people on what Blue Heron is doing. And since I don't really have that ability, I decided a website was probably better. As far as the future goes, you know, again, specialized freight is starting to pick up a little bit more. You know, we're continuing to go after kind of our niche market. And we're also continuing to train our drivers so that once we are able to gain new customers, they have the ability to really problem solve and move the freight and that kind of thing. So I'm really actually very excited about how things look for the rest of the year going into next year.
That's great. I'm glad to hear it. Daryl?
I'm about the same as Kim. I'm a little nervous whether we're going to have a second wave or not and what's going to happen with the second wave. But unfortunately, my business actually does better in a situation like this because there's a lot less full loads moving. So we're rocking and rolling. I'm trying to determine what, because we're about to go into our business season because chain-up law is coming on and carriers don't run out there during chain-up law. So I think it's going to be a great year for the LTL business, or once again, specialized stuff, as long as project doesn't get canceled. But I'm having a hard time seeing the freight this year. I've always followed the LTL freight and how freight moves and truckload, because when truckload goes way up, people don't want to do LTL. So my business gets really busy. So I think it's going to be a good year, but I'm not 100% sure how the year is going to finish.
Okay. Interesting. My take on it is I do think we're starting to see that second wave. You can see the numbers are starting to creep up, especially in areas, you know, in BC and in Ontario. I think Alberta too, and Quebec. I think those four provinces. So I think in Canada we're going to see a second wave. And my biggest worry, I think business will be okay. It will hold its own. My biggest worry is how many companies out there are going to go bankrupt, you know? Some of these are good customers of ours now that are, you know, that they don't know themselves. They're probably very solvent. Or they wouldn't be, you know, they obviously pay their bills. But I have to tell you, one business experience that I have had over, especially in the last 10 years, almost 100% of any bankruptcy we've had have always been within terms on their credit. There's no sign of this. So what happens is, and this is what I think all of the motor carriers and brokers listening, we all need to be aware of this. What happens is you have a client that's servicing a customer and they're very healthy and they're doing well and they're shipping whatever the product is, widgets, to this customer, and all of a sudden that customer goes broke and takes them down. So they were healthy yesterday, but today they're gone. And they call it contagion or contagion. And that is my biggest worry. We have a great credit team. They do a wonderful job, but, you know, there's some stuff that's out of their control. And certainly in trucking and logistics, some of the customers give us a lot of work. So it puts us in a rough position. We don't want to say no to it. It's great work. Certain industries, I think, are more prone to it than others. I think, for the most part, the food industry has been great because people have been consuming food and paper products. So when you get into some of the other manufactured goods, it's questionable. And then some of them are wild cards. I just sent Rico something the other day that I found. I thought was fascinating. One of the best businesses through this whole COVID thing, other than food, which they were not expecting, is the bicycle business. The bicycle manufacturers have gone crazy. So that's certainly a step in the right direction for them. And I do think that we're going to be bringing some of these industries back to North America, because that's good for us, for everybody that's on this call, whether you're at the roundtable or you're a listener. I think a lot of these industries will have to come back to North America, because we all saw the disruption in the supply chains, since March. It's been very difficult. And I don't think people are used to that, nor will we accept it. So there will be a cost to manufacturing goods here rather than overseas, but I think we're going to see an awful lot more things being manufactured in North America. At least I hope we do. Maybe we've learned from this, especially food. I think we've had a tough lesson on that. Rico, what's your take? What do you think?
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Now I can, yeah.
I definitely think that things are we are making adjustments. I think that more and more people have definitely, especially the grocery industry and stuff, when it comes to those things on the supply chain, I think that this was a big wake-up call on how they order and the way that they do the resupply. The supply chain has adjusted itself and has kind of, with the new COVID environment, I definitely think that people have adjusted the way of their buying and restocking and supplies. And definitely I think that some of the things that they have outsourced, I think that people are taking another look at bringing some of those things back. With a lot of restaurants and a lot of stuff are probably losing a lot of that business, but more and more people are buying and eating at home with groceries and stuff. I'm so focused on groceries because that's kind of my niche that I focus on with my research. I try to see where there's an opportunity to be had with me and the reefer freight and the reefer opportunities with temperature controlled freight. Now, some things definitely picking up too as well. Like you say, right now, unfortunately, we got the storms that are bearing down on us. So definitely, flatbeds are going to be picking up, and of course, reefers are going to have to be dealing with that as well, because you're going to have to be bringing more food, ice, and supplies and things of that nature to the affected areas. So I think that the outlook for the rest of the remaining of the year is pretty good. Now, how effective things may be as far as getting back to normal is going to depend solely on whether they are going to be successful at actually finding a vaccine for this thing. They're talking here at the CDC that's going to be the only defense against COVID-19. But hopefully, not sure if they're ever going to find a vaccine or whatever, but I'm definitely ready for some semblance of normalcy to come back to what we were definitely used to before all these strange things have taken place. I'm looking at the time. I want to give everyone opportunity. Of course, Kim, you can go first to tell people or whatever you want to know, if you want to share information on how people can get in contact with you, or if you just want to say something in closing, I want to give you that opportunity before we get up out of here.
Sure. Thanks, Rico. So I first just want to say I really love the trucking industry, and I think it's exciting, and I love kind of the changes in it. And I think that the trucking industry is really going to pick up, and I think all of us are going to do really well. If anybody wants to get a hold of me, you can reach me at kheck@blueheronlogistics.com. www.lowesandhomedepot.com, or you can always give me a call, which is always what I prefer, 585-415-1557. Thank you very much, guys.
Well, thanks for being on the show. We appreciate it. You guys do a great job up there.
Daryl, you're up next, my friend.
I would have to agree with Kim. I love this industry. You get up every morning excited to go to work, even after like 28 years in it. There's a lot of great people. But if anybody wants to get a hold of us, you can get a hold of me at Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, at Darenco Specialized. That's D-A-R-U-N-C-O, specialized.com. Or our phone number is 705-214-9659. And the easy way to remember the name, it stands for Daryl Runs Company. And once again, I appreciate being on the show. I love being part of this industry and knowing people that are as passionate and love getting up in the morning and going to work and making the industry better.
Never lose that, Daryl. You know what? And to our listeners, that's the hook with this industry. You know, people come in it, and if you love it, you never leave it. And I don't know about in the U.S., but in Canada, transportation is the number one provider of jobs. And, you know, because you can be anything. You know, there's so many people required to move freight in our countries. So it doesn't matter whether you're good at books or you're good at dispatching or you're good at fixing trucks or driving or loading them. There's work for everybody. And I don't think that's about to change. I think we have a great future ahead of us.
Chuck, you up next, my friend.
Okay. If you want to get a hold of me, shoot me an email. It's very easy. It's chuck@traffix, T-R-A-F-F-I-X, .com. You can send me a private message on Instagram at snowceo, or you can call me, extension 203, and the phone number is 1-800-388-4352. And I just want to remind our listeners that if you need me just to get you set up with traffic, or you're having a challenge anywhere, if you're having a challenge somewhere in your life in trucking and you need some advice, I'm here for all of our listeners. I just want to remind everybody that I made a vow about 3 years ago that what I'm going to do is I'm not going to donate money to any charity, and instead I donate my time to people in the industry. So if you need some help somewhere, need some advice, give me a call, give me an email. If I can help you in any way, I'd love to help our listeners or anybody else in the industry any way that's possible. So don't be bashful. Go ahead, Rico.
Absolutely. Of course, the show, we are on Instagram, Rates and Lanes Podcast on Instagram, also on Facebook. Be social with us. Let us know some things that you would like for us to cover here on the show. Give us some homework to do. We'll do our best to try to bring that information to you and bring industry professionals and experts that can kind of help answer questions along those lines of whatever it is that you would like to know about. So every Tuesday is the show, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to 8 p.m. So we wanted to thank our special guests that joined us, that took time out of their schedules. And, of course, we want to thank you, the listener, whether you're downloading this podcast or whether you're listening to us live, taking time out of your schedule. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you took a little time to spend with us, and we're definitely grateful that you did. So once again, want to thank our special panel that joined us tonight, Ms. Kim Heck and Daryl Rutherford. Want to thank them. And, of course, my co-host, Chuck Snow. God willing, we'll see you same time, same place next week. Be careful out there, everybody. Be safe. Stay healthy. God bless you, and good night. Keep it in between the mustard and the
mayonnaise. Catch you on the flip-flop.